This meeting is now being recorded.
Hello and welcome to the jurisdiction subgroup call on April 11th, 2017, 1300 UTC. Begin with a brief review of the agenda. As you can see, we'll begin with the usual administration. Review of any decisions and action items from the last call. A review of our working method. And then the questions to ICANN Legal, which we received responses to yesterday. Hopefully people have had a chance to look at those. I'm hopeful that we will have Samantha Eisner or someone from ICANN Legal on to discuss this, although I realize that too late that we scheduled this call on the first day of Passover, Samantha's like me, she shouldn't be on this call, but since I'm chairing, I decided I would be on the call anyway, hopefully I will not be smoked down for that. After that, an update on the questionnaire. 5 minutes. We have three responses, one of which will take more time than we can this time. People need to take more time to review it. We also need to get our evaluation team underway. Then update on the analysis of cases. We'll probably, given the length of this call, not have time to actually discuss those. But we should acknowledge they have been done, and we'll do them next week. Any other business? Any comments on the agenda? Any concerns? Anything that can't wait for AOB to be identified as AOB? Seeing nothing, we'll move on to the administration, and I'll ask if anybody has changes to their statements of interest. Seeing none, I'll ask if we have anybody who is only on audio. It appears we don't have anybody who is audio only, so we're all in the chat. Someone has just joined, and that person is on a
phone. Hi, it's Becky. Sorry, I'm just not on Adobe yet.
No problem. Do we just ask for phone number participants, and there you are. Not usually a request. It's honored, so in that way. In any case, now we have identified Becky Burr as the phone number participant, and we will move on. Review of decisions and action items from the last call. There were no decisions to review. We did, however, have a discussion of working methods and the status of the subgroup. I prepared and circulated somewhat belatedly, but again, the Jewish holiday actually started last night at sundown, and since we were hosting, that really meant it started about 24 hours earlier. We had 14 people over for dinner. So did not quite have the time I would have liked to finish this up, but it has been circulated. Maybe we can that is the next item on the list. So let us put that up on the screen. So I'm not sure if people have had a chance to review this or walk through it briefly. Really, I tried to be fact-based in this document, and get into thorny issues that need to be discussed, since this is a work plan and not a discussion in itself of our scope. So we'll be talking about this again on the plenary tomorrow. People want to know where our group is at, and this document tells us. First, the general approach that we have discussed a number of times before, which is that we will look for issues that are caused by ICANN's jurisdictional setup. Only when we identify an issue and the group agrees that what has been identified is in fact an issue, and it is an issue that falls within the remit of the subgroup, we will go on to look at proposed remedies. And then when we look at, we should not jump the gun and look at remedies until an issue has been identified that requires discussion of that remedy. Otherwise, we're talking about remedies that might not ever have an issue that triggers them, or potentially triggers them, and that's a waste of time. This is perhaps something we need to do a little more assiduously. And we need to consider how the remedy would resolve the issue, or if it wouldn't, and also any effects and consequences of the remedy. And most importantly, since we are in the CCWG on enhancing accountability, we need to consider how the potential remedy would enhance ICANN's accountability, improving ICANN's accountability over the issue that has been identified. Also, whether it would have a negative effect or no effect on ICANN's accountability. So far, we have worked on the multiple layers of jurisdiction document, which turned into somewhat of a discussion of the scope of the subgroup's work, that document is still a document in process. We chose to move from there to the influence of ICANN's existing jurisdiction and to a scope of that question that was essentially one that all could agree was in scope for the group. What is the influence of ICANN's existing jurisdiction relating to resolution of disputes, i.e. governing law and venue, on the actual operation of ICANN's policies and accountability mechanisms? This document has had considerable time, but again, remains a work in process. We discussed the place, whether we could ever advise on place of incorporation. We identified that as a remedy and put it to the side. And we looked at a hypothetical, which also remains a document in process. At this point, we switched somewhat to looking for outside inputs and drafted a questionnaire, which ultimately has been put out for responses, which will end April 17th, less than a week from today, and also developed questions for ICANN Legal, which were sent out, and the responses received yesterday. We're involved in a review of the litigations that ICANN's been involved in, so we can learn from them. Nobody other than perhaps John Jeffrey knows everything about all of these cases, and even then probably has better things to do than remember them completely, so we do need to learn from them and make sure we're all informed on what how they influence our work. We stopped active deliberation on the influence and hypothetical documents until we got our inputs from the questionnaire, legal questions, and the litigation review, all of which are rolling along. Several open issues in our work. We need to define our scope better. Questions answered and work to be done. The advice, first define your mission, is one that we need to revisit. So clarifying the mandate and clarifying the gap analysis, which is part of our Annex 12 work. Clarifying our deliverables and our timeline and target moves us to the last bit of this document, which is the timeline. Can kind of scroll quickly past the first page or so, of which talks about what we've done so far, and got ourselves up to April here on the last page, which looks to us completing the questionnaire and legal work as we have, reviewing and evaluating them, and continuing the review of ICANN's litigation. Perhaps we can finish the review of ICANN's litigation by the end of this month. That would hopefully bring us all three major inputs, closing or close to closing, by the end of this month, which would allow us to move actively back to the current documents that we're working on. We need to think about whether these are deliverables. We need to revisit the scope issue so that we do have an understanding, because some people think we're doing too little, some people think we're doing too much, and we really need to have an understanding of what the parameters are of our work, even if not everybody agrees with that. So hopefully we would have a draft for ICANN 59 in Johannesburg that could be discussed on a discussion basis in Johannesburg. And then after that, review, revise that after the, and submit it to the plenary, by the end of the month, post Johannesburg, and then go to a public comment period in July, and perhaps actually have, you know, it revised deliverable by August. That may be a bit ambitious, with regard to either pre-Johannesburg, but I think we should have something for Johannesburg, or post-Johannesburg, depending upon, resolving issues of scope. But that is a hopeful and optimistic review. Are there any comments on this revised work plan and sketch? Mathieu, please go ahead.
Thank you, Greg. I hope you can hear me all right.
Absolutely.
So I'm speaking as a participant in this subgroup, and definitely not as a co-chair. I think I'm in very, very strong support of a lot of years you highlighted in the document, and I think it's important to have it documented and explained at the plenary level. There's also a number of things in this document that demonstrate that the work we've been doing was not only intense, but it's also producing some valuable findings. Obviously, still left for discussions about what the recommendations can be, but I think that's a good thing. I have two specific comments. One is a suggestion for an addition in the document, because the document doesn't really relate how much of the work has taken place on NIST. It was often going in all directions at the same time, but I think it would be valuable to recognize the extent of this discussion that took place, and at some points, there were lists of issues or specific issues that were touched upon. And I think one task we should probably have at some point is find out those type of issues that were discussed, even if we can conclude or at least relate that at this point there was no consensus that it was an issue. But I think that would give a recognition of the work that's been taking place on the list, in addition to what you are currently describing. And in terms of when we finally release a report, it would also provide transparency about what has been also discussed and maybe did not reach the consensus level. So some form of summary of the key things or extracts from some of the discussions that took place, I think would be valuable to store somewhere as a deliverable from our group, even if it is clearly labeled as this is non-consensus. So that's my first suggestion. The second is looking in the future. I wonder, and that was inspired by a comment, David, and I know he's right after me in the list, David, in his capacity as rapporteur for the IoT working group. I wonder if we should really maintain a weekly meeting frequency, or if we should give more time between meetings so that people spend more time actually doing the heavy lifting of reading documents, editing them, and so on. So I wonder if we would not achieve more by meeting less frequently. And that's more of an open question for the group at this point. So that's my comments on the document, Greg.
Thank you, Mathieu. Both of those are very good points. And let's return to the scheduling point for the end of the call, if we can, at least for first discussion. David McCauley.
Thank you, Greg. David McCauley, for the record. And I do agree with what Mathieu just said as far as I'm hoping in the IoT group we can sort of pivot to more work on list, but Mathieu stated it well. The comment I want to make about this draft is specifically with respect to April 2017, where you say subgroup revisits scope issue, and I think that's fine. I think many in this group will recognize that I'm one of those who believes we should be doing less. But in any event, if that is in fact going to be teed up as a discussion item, I would encourage you to do two things. One is to tee that up, you know, at least a week in advance, underscore what that discussion is so people can come to the meeting and we can have a chance to sort of finally discuss and decide this. And two, to encourage people to review what's been said already and understand this is not an invitation to rehash issues that have already been hashed, if that's a word, but that it would be good to talk about this generally with a view towards making decisions in this respect. So that's my 2 cents worth. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, David. Very good thoughts from a fellow rapporteur. Shows your thoughts are working well in that regard. Steve Del Bianco.
Thank you, Greg. It's Steve Del Bianco with the BC. Just an observer, and so I'd like to make an observation and a question. I noticed in today's agenda, you're discussing the work plan prior to walking through ICANN Legal's responses. And I read ICANN Legal's responses, and to my mind, it validated what 95% of you in this group have been saying for several months. And so my question would be that if you had gone through the legal responses at the beginning of today's call, do you believe that should have modified the work plan, given that it validated so much of what has said earlier, or do you believe that it doesn't really change the work plan, given that they came back so solidly along the lines of what most of you have been saying? Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. My answer to that question is that I think it makes the work plan more realistic and less optimistic in terms of timing. So I'm hopeful that will stand true. I'm looking forward to reviewing that. And I think that I think it also validates the decision to wait for our input from here and the questionnaire and litigation before we go back to churning through the documents and hoping that we don't churn the documents much longer. One quick observation is that I think there's a connection between the scope and the work on the list and the discussion about not working, not having meetings every week, which is that in order to do that, we would need to be far more disciplined on the list. It doesn't mean shutting down speech, but it does mean staying on topic and recognizing that this is not a general discussion group on all things jurisdiction. So we would need to, if we're going to do work on the list, we would need to be more directed calls do have the advantage of keeping our work ticking along. So we would need to, it would actually be a very good thing if our list could be more disciplined. I almost wonder if we should set up a water cooler list as well for people to chat about things that aren't really part of our work. In any case, I note Avery's comment in a doleful brown, and I wish you a Chag Sameach, Avery. It's wonderful that rapporteurs want people to work more on the list, but will wishing make it so? Implied question mark. Any other comments on this schedule? And thank you for the helpful comments. Are there any objections to this work plan and schedule? Understanding it will be modified somewhat in regard to the connection suggestions made so far, but we would bring this to the plenary circulated very shortly today in advance of the plenary. So are there any objections to this document? I see no objections, so we'll consider this at least as a discussion draft, not objected to, and we can move it along, which we'll also do for this call. So let's go to the next item, which is the response from ICANN Legal, as Steve Del Bianco mentioned. I hope we could put that up. Thank you, Brenda. Now, I don't know if we have anyone from ICANN Legal on the call. If there is someone from ICANN Legal, and they could put their hand up or note that they're here on the chat, that would be helpful. It appears from the lack of response that it's just that we do not have a member of ICANN Legal on the call this week. Let us still take a few minutes to review the answer from ICANN Legal. Clearly, it's several pages long, and we don't want to walk through it in great detail. But a high-level review, I think, is in order. Our first question was whether ICANN is subject to the countries where it has physical presences. And the answer was that there are many places where ICANN could appropriately be subject to suit, and ICANN has submitted to jurisdiction, of course, in some of the above jurisdictions. Notably, no jurisdiction where ICANN has been provided with immunity from the courts or from litigation. And as a result, there's possibility litigation could be initiated against ICANN and maintained in any of the above referenced location or any other location. Notes that whether a specific court is an appropriate place to maintain a suit is a question that's based on the facts and circumstances of each case, the conduct, the ties to the jurisdiction, and the propriety or competence, as it's put in legal terms, of a court to hear any individual case. Those are discussed questions that the court decides typically. So no bright line rule where I can or cannot be sued, and not limited just to where ICANN has a hub or engagement office. Also noted, ICANN has never agreed to waive its ability to bring any and all appropriate defenses to litigation, including the defense of lack of jurisdiction, as we saw in the pool.com case, which settled before there was any decision as to whether jurisdiction was proper in that case. So that's the first question. Second was a question of whether litigation could be maintained elsewhere besides places of physical presence. So U.S. states and jurisdictions other than California and D.C., where ICANN does have a physical presence. Countries or jurisdictions other than the presence jurisdictions where ICANN has employees who are residing and working remotely, so there is some ICANN activity going on in a way. France is given an example. We have staff who are permanently located in France and working remotely. In countries where ICANN has no physical presence on an ongoing basis but has held an ICANN meeting or a GDD summit, which are significant multi-stakeholder operations. Also those where contracted parties are incorporated, headquartered, located. And lastly, the none of the above category. The answer here refers to the prior answer. Note that ICANN could be subject to jurisdiction in multiple places appropriately, and that in each case, whether the court can hear the case needs to be reviewed in light of the claims, how the claims are tied to the jurisdiction, ICANN's ties to that jurisdiction, et cetera, standard jurisdictional analysis. ICANN cannot presume to know what any court would do if faced with these claims. ICANN would assert any and all appropriate defenses, as noted, including jurisdiction challenges. And there is no bright line rule as to whether any litigation cannot or can be successfully maintained against ICANN in any location, just by virtue of contacts or lack of contacts that are noted in this question, which are the physical presence type of contact. These two questions, one and two, are related, as noted. Before we move on, are there any questions about these or other remarks about these? Noting Steve's remark that this has been consistent with much of what has been discussed by many of us. Anybody find any of this remarkable or skeptics or anything like that at this point? Seeing none, I'll move on to question three. If there is a judgment against ICANN, would the impact on ICANN differ based on the category of jurisdiction above, the type of physical presence, basically? Would ICANN be able to avoid the effects of a judgment in any jurisdiction, e.g. by ending its physical presence in that jurisdiction? Answer is that there is a wealth of jurisprudence on the ability to enforce judgments in jurisdictions other than those where the judgment was initially rendered. If a judgment, an appropriate judgment, can be appropriately perfected against ICANN in an appropriate jurisdiction, it will be difficult for ICANN to avoid the effect of that judgment. It is worth noting that litigation in the U.S. tends to look at the state of the parties at the time of the initiation of the suit, not where they are during the time of enforcement. For example, ICANN could not avoid having a judgment entered against it, if appropriate, or conduct brought in a suit in 2016 just by ending its presence in the jurisdiction in 2017. Question can also be viewed more broadly about the impact of doing business in a particular place. ICANN is business is currently based on significant contacts and maintenance of business ties within the U.S. If ICANN were to move its headquarters outside of the U.S., there are still likely a significant number of contacts that ICANN maintains in the U.S., such that ICANN would still be subject to following the laws required to do business or conduct business in the U.S., including observing U.S.-imposed sanctions. Any questions on this answer, comments, or the like? Seeing none, let me just check the chat here. None in the chat as well. Question four, how would concepts of general jurisdiction versus specific jurisdiction apply to any of the above questions? Concept of general jurisdiction, where ICANN is generally held to suit based on its overall contacts with the jurisdiction, and specific jurisdiction where ICANN is held to suit based on actions targeted or tied to a specific area are essential to the answers above. They are part of the facts and circumstances that any court must consider when identifying if the court has jurisdiction over the parties to the litigation. Any questions on this point? I understand that some of this may be legalese to some extent, but I think it's fairly clear that it's a facts and circumstances answer, essentially. Seeing no comments on this one, move on to the next. How do issues of proper venue or the lack thereof impact the answers to the above questions? As with question four, just read, the issue of venue, whether the court is the appropriate legal forum for the dispute, is also essential to any court's decision to proceed with a suit that has been filed before it. Any comments on this? Seeing none, move on. Question six, how would questions one and two be answered for PTI rather than ICANN? As with ICANN, PTI has not been granted immunity in any country, territory, or court. The ability to maintain suit against PTI would depend on the facts and circumstances. Notably, PTI does not maintain offices or have any employees located outside of the United States. Any comments on this? I would just note that since it's a facts and circumstances analysis, clearly the facts and circumstances are somewhat different for PTI than for ICANN, as noted in the last sentence. Item seven, or question seven, we note that the Articles of Incorporation state, among other things, that ICANN shall promote the global public interest in the operational stability of the Internet and operate for the benefit of the Internet community as a whole, carrying out its activities in conformity with relevant principles of international law and international conventions and applicable local law. And that ICANN also commits to operate for the benefit of the, well, that's also in the bylaw. We generally understand that in many places jurisdiction is premised on physical presence in some manner. But we wonder whether in the digital age the concept of quote unquote targeting or some other legal theory can be used as a basis for litigation, jurisdiction. In other words, we wonder whether a party based where ICANN has no office could successfully maintain a lawsuit against ICANN in a local court based on the argument that ICANN targeted them improperly for some action or some other legal theory. Answer is that ICANN cannot provide a potential roadmap for litigants or provide admissions in response to these questions that might make it easier for litigants to bring ICANN into court. The ability of a litigant to state a valid cause of action under law and achieve a judgment is dependent upon many things. The law the litigant is relying on, cause of action, the actions of ICANN. The litigant believes supports the cause of action, the propriety of jurisdiction, and the evidence presented to support the claim for jurisdiction and for the underlying claim of the case. ICANN cannot presume what a court would do in this hypothetical situation or presume the outcome of any litigation actually filed against it. Any comments on this question? I see a comment by Becky Burr in the chat. It is clearly correct to say that many, if not most, countries will provide jurisdiction in a case where ICANN has purposely availed itself of the jurisdiction. And Steve DelBianco asks, couldn't a litigant just review prior cases to determine where or how ICANN responds to claims of jurisdiction? Certainly could, and we are doing that ourselves, not as a litigant, of course, hoping for some wisdom. I see Becky has her hand up. Becky, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm finding these answers a little frustrating because obviously it makes sense that ICANN does not want to provide a roadmap for litigants. And of course, it is also true, as we've noted, that the first thing that anybody in a court case does is argue that there's no jurisdiction. None of those things are determinative about whether or not jurisdiction would properly lie and a local court would grant a petitioner the right to bring ICANN to court in a place where ICANN has purposely availed itself, targeted, reached out. That's kind of common. So I just want to say I would be careful about looking. I am sure, and I have seen it, that ICANN, like all defendants in litigation, first of all, argues that there's no jurisdiction. That said, that's not that is not determinative of what must happen. That is just a statement of what ICANN has done in the past, and it also does not distinguish it from any other defendant that I've ever seen. So I think, you know, the sort of basic legal concepts of jurisdiction would lie here, no matter what ICANN argued. The question would be, were there sufficient contacts with that jurisdiction for a court in that jurisdiction to say that it had jurisdiction over ICANN? And that's something that you can't determine separate from the facts of a particular case.
Thank you, Becky. Those are very helpful observations, both on the questions and on the answers as well. David McCauley.
Thanks, Greg. David McCauley here. I just wanted to say I agree with what Becky just said entirely, and I think it's not surprising that ICANN would not yield any ground on potential defenses. It wouldn't put forth a roadmap for future litigants. I think that's all fine. I think these questions are relevant to what this group wants to do and what we I think this was our thought process was, is before we go to either Sidley or to some kind of a law professor that specializes in this, we would ask ICANN Legal for their view. And I think ICANN Legal should be thanked for giving us responses. I think they're not surprising, but they are interesting in some respects. And so then we could then consider, you know, there are trends that take place in things like jurisdiction, so maybe we would consider getting other advice. I don't know, but I personally think ICANN Legal. I agree with what Becky said, and I think that, you know, the ground is now prepared if we want to do anything further. Thanks very much.
Thank you, David, and Becky as well, and Paul in the chat. I agree. The questions, the answers are limited, but predictable. ICANN as a potential litigant. Answers the questions as one perhaps would in that case. We'll need to consider as a group whether and how we might get additional advice to answer any of these questions and decide, you know, based on what our work is, you know, how much we would do and what where the answers might best come from, whether it's a law professor or a jurisdictional specialist, a litigator in practice, or the like, and which questions we actually need further answers on, especially since if we're spending money, we need to make sure we're spending it wisely. Move on to basically the last question. That's the B, choice of law and venues in ICANN's contract. We also want to understand how ICANN handles choice of law and venue in its contract. For each type of ICANN contract, we want the ICANN to indicate whether the contract specifies the choice of law or of the venue. In other words, what law governs and where the case could take place. or either specified, please indicate the jurisdiction or venue specified and the reasons for these choices. Where not specified, please explain why. Based on CCWG Accountability's report setting out the scope of the WS2 topic, I can note that focus is on registry and registrar contracts. Registry agreements and RAA are based on model templates, each of which was developed with stakeholders subject to public comment. In registry agreements, particularly the base agreement developed in the new GTLD program, venue has two possibilities, arbitration and litigation in Los Angeles County, California, USA, and arbitration and or litigation in Geneva, Switzerland. Only intergovernment organizations, government entities, or registry operators facing other special circumstances may select Geneva for venue. Agreement on Geneva as an alternative venue was reached in development of the AGB, reflected by the availability of alternative text of Section 5.2 of the base agreement. As other venues have not been considered through the ICANN process, ICANN has not entered into any registry agreement with a venue other than Los Angeles or Geneva. There are approximately 10 registry operators that are not IGOs or government entities that have identified Geneva as their venue. Model RAA requires venue for arbitration and litigation to take place in LA, and ICANN does not have any registrar accreditation agreements that vary on this issue. Historically, these agreements have been silent on the choice of law to be applied in an arbitration litigation. This allows the parties to argue, pursuant to the relevant rules and procedures, what law is appropriate to govern the specific conduct, and arbitrators in courts are well suited to making those types of determinations. ICANN also has other contracts that accord to service to its mission. For example, IANA stewardship process, there's now contracts with the RIRs for the performance of IANA numbering functions, IETF, for performance of IANA protocol parameters functions, and PTI for the performance of the naming function, each of which had appropriate public consultation with their development. Then for the SLA with the RIRs, venue selected is Geneva, Switzerland, or other location agreed by the parties. Governing law is California, state and federal law. For the MOU concerning protocol parameters work with the IETF, there is no discussion of arbitration or litigation or choice of law. The MOU and supplemental agreement maintain other escalation and termination rights. For the PTI numbering services agreement, governing law is the state of California, USA, excluding conflict of law rules, venue and court within California. Customer mediation process is required to follow the laws of California and to be conducted in California and thus agree mutually. There are no third-party beneficiaries for these agreements, so the agreements don't provide rights to people or entities that are not parties to the agreement to claim breach of contract or other causes of action solely because of the existence of the contract. The venue and choice of law clause is defined commitments among the contracted party and not generally where ICANN or the contracted party has agreed to be subject to suit. Any modification reached through the relevant base agreement modification procedure. ICANN has a number of other contracts, leases, office machine contracts, vendor agreements, professional service agreements. ICANN follows procurement guidelines for these engagements and where appropriate includes clauses relating to choice of law and venue. Within these operations-based agreements, ICANN and the contractor negotiate on the most appropriate selection of each. At times, even identifying that in relation to a single contract, different laws might govern the conduct of different parties. And each negotiation is fact-specific. Any questions on this response? Paul McGrady, I see your hand is up.
Paul, sorry about that. Paul McGrady here. Yeah, Paul McGrady here. Yeah, I had the problem. My phone locked itself out while on mute. Apologies to all. I do want to go back and just say, have something in the record in relationship to the claim that there are no third-party beneficiaries. think that may have been a better, a more easy thing to argue before the new GTLD round. But now there do appear to be rights to trigger complaints. I think there was a complaint recently against dot feedback. The only way that that complaint could have moved forward was as if feedback were tied to respond to those complaints by third parties. So clearly there is a contractual aspect between ICANN and at least registries, at least the dot feedback registry should be more narrow, that allows some mechanism to move forward. So I think a blanket comment that there are no third-party beneficiaries probably needs to be looked at a little bit deeper. I don't think it's necessarily ICANN legal. We would ask to look at that any more deeply, because I think that is a legal position that they're taking. But I think it should be distinguished from the facts on the ground, which are, you know, very different now than they were before the last round. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Perhaps it's more accurate to say that there's no express recital of anyone identified as an express third-party beneficiary in these agreements, rather than that there are no third-party beneficiaries per se. So, and then I think we need to ask ourselves whether this is relevant to our analysis of the questions before the subgroup. As interesting and relevant as it is to larger issues of dealing with ICANN. Mesya?
Thank you, Greg. Just to reiterate what I said, what I put in the chat, first, this is really, really interesting and goes to the heart of the dispute layer of the jurisdiction issue. And so I think it's really, really helpful that we have this answer from ICANN Legal. I would suggest one follow-up about those 10 registries who are not governments or IGOs who selected the Geneva alternative for the venue for dispute resolution, because it would be interesting to know whether all the this basically whether anyone suggesting, asking for this has been granted disability or whether there have been any request denied. And if there have been any denials, what were the criteria that were used by ICANN Legal? But I think that's an interesting aspect to investigate further on. The second thing is there's an obvious discrepancy between registries and registrar that appears in the new contract, since registrars only have the choice of Los Angeles, California. And so I think that would be a question for our group moving forward, whether we think it's an enhancement or not that should be considered to provide an alternative for the registrar accreditation agreement as well. On the model, for instance, of the registry one. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. Those are very good observations and follow-ups for us to consider. If there are no further comments on this document, we'll go back to the agenda. We have 8 minutes left by my clock. Next item on the list is the questionnaires responses received. We've received 3 responses. To note briefly, a response from Shin Takamura and questionnaire answers the first 2 questions. About whether ICANN has affected the business privacy or ability to use domain name related services or any dispute resolution or process. Answer is, I do not recognize such cases as those in the question. Answers questions 3 and 4 as no. Second, an answer from Carlos Vera
answers no to all questions. So the third answer is a lengthy answer from the Just Net Coalition, touching on a variety of responses and other issues. And given the time here, it would not be possible for me to summarize the answers to that, that in that response. We'll discuss that further, hopefully on the list, as suggested by Mathieu, and as well as in the call, and in the primarily, I think, in the subgroup for questionnaires before we bring it back to the list and the full group. We'll see what shows up between now and the 17th and be reporting further on this. So we can move on to item 8, update on the analysis of cases. We have received two further analyses, the name.space Inc. versus ICANN case summarized by David McCauley, and the Employee Media LLC versus ICANN case summarized by Raphael Beauregard-Lacroix. And I thank both of them for these. And again, hopefully we will be able to review these on the next call and on the list as well, hoping we make ample and focused use of our list. So that brings us to all other business. Do we have any other business or any other comments on what we've heard so far in this call that perhaps people didn't think of at the very time when it was being discussed? We have 4 minutes for any last thoughts or other business items people would like to bring up at this time. So, seeing none, note that we will discuss name.space and employee media on the next call. I will put some finishing touches on the discussion draft of our revised work plan, submit that for discussion in the plenary. Other than that, we'll continue working, all of us, hopefully, on responding, on analyzing the cases, and on reviewing the questionnaires, and encourage everyone to read carefully the responses from ICANN Legal so we can work with those in the future. I want to thank all of you for being on this call, especially those of you for whom this is a major religious holiday, have chosen to be here nonetheless. Also want to thank you all for your questions. Wish you all Chag Sameach and good Pesach. For those who, between now and our next call, will be celebrating Easter, happy Easter. And so we are now adjourned until April 18th. We may end the recording and adjourn this call. Thank you and have a good day. Bye.